Thanks, Dean. Hi, everyone. I'm Oliver. I'm an addict. It's really good to be here. Thanks, Mickey, for asking me. He actually heard me talk on Sunday, just a day before I celebrated being 6 years clean, and invited me here to do this as kind of a birthday share, so I'm really grateful for that opportunity, actually. Obviously, having Sunday to Friday to think about it, I've reflected once or twice about what I might or might not say. Probably forgotten all of it by now, and just going to speak through the adrenaline-soaked gibberish for the next 5 minutes. Welcome to any newcomers. This is a fantastic environment. I'm really pleased that I was guided in the direction of Narcotics Anonymous. My experience is that I haven't used since getting here and since engaging with this way of life. I was very promptly lost the obsession to use. Very quickly, the desire diminished. And I was introduced to the new way of life that NA promises. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. I used for about 17 or 18 years. I started as a really young man, really young, lost, directionless young man who kind of just ran with the herd, found a group that I kind of related to. They were the rebellious kind of outsider clique I desperately wanted to be a part of, and followed them into a life that was pretty reckless pretty quickly. By the age of 16, I was introduced to my first rehabilitation process. Came out of there, got into opiate addiction by about 18, 19, and was really, really in the grips of it at a really tender age. I was running with people that terrified me. I was leading a lifestyle that, even in my kind of youthful innocence, I knew was just really wrong and really not befitting my morality. And I think about 21, 22, I started to get that kind of desperation to stop and that yearning to change it all and all of that stuff. But I didn't get this till I was about 29. All throughout my 20s, I was in and out of rehab centres. And just wasn't. I was introduced to 12-step recovery when I was 22, but I kind of didn't have a clue what NA was. I used to come in on a Tuesday night, and I just remember kind of viewing it as this extra group that we had to do, and I'd go to resentfully and couldn't really hear anything at that moment in time. And then it became so much different. I carried on using it, got progressively more miserable, more lonely, more soul-destroying until I completely bottomed out, completely screamed to the heavens for help. I was in Pentonville at the time. I was on a detox wing. I was behaving so chaotically. I was facing an extra stretch of sentence. My life had just become a nightmare. But there was something that kind of occurred for me, which was, we talk about the window of clarity, or, you know, we get moments of opportunity for recovery. And I remember in Pentonville just being able to see that everything that was going on around me, all the chaos, all the devastation, and the fact that I was using the drugs I was using, and those two things were related, it kind of was like a massive realisation to me. It was like the end of denial, basically, and I just knew I needed to put the action in, I needed to take responsibility, and I started reaching out and asking for help, and it was recommended that I went away for a bit of treatment. I'm really glad I did. I was quite a feral user at the end of the road, and I went off for a little stint down in the South Coast. Did a six-week detox down there, and I feel really fortunate, actually. I was really held in that environment, and also at the end, the tail end of quite an awkward benzo detox, I remember going to an NA group. H and I used to come in there also on a Tuesday night, and I remember hearing the message. I don't remember what the guys said. I don't remember much about that meeting, but I really, really remember just being illuminated with identification, really relating to these guys, trusting that they'd lived a lifestyle very similar to my own and had found a way out. And I trusted that, and I believed in it, and it just felt magic. I'd been bereft of hope for a long time. I'd been very kind of defeated by my addiction. So to believe that there may be a way out of it was, you know, miraculous. And it also made me more suggestible. I was prepared, basically, to... I went and spoke to the treatment team there, who said, look, you're in quite a damaged state, and we recommend you go on to a halfway house. And, you know, I was dead set against that idea when I'd got there, and sort of like conceding that they might have better ideas than my own mind was generating. I kind of followed it, and the next thing that they suggested was coming back to London, and a lot of the tail end of my using was here, and it, in my mind, me coming back to London meant it was dead certain I was going to use again. I only knew people that were using wild concoctions of drugs here. I only kind of knew that lifestyle in this city, and I was kind of like, why would you want to send me back there? But regardless of everything I was thinking and feeling about these ideas, I followed their suggestions and I followed their guidance, and I haven't used since I've been back in London. And I mean, the best thing about the environment I went to, the place doesn't exist anymore. It was just an all-guys institute on Clapham Common, and there was just a gang of really desperate guys there. There was a gang of guys really, really fresh out of the traps that wanted to find a new way of life. And I remember my roommate really connecting to this stuff. He was doing like 13, 14 meetings a week at one point. And I just came in here on his coattails, because I came in here and I was terrified of you lot. I was terrified of interacting with anyone without drinking a drug in my system. I'd been anaesthetised for so long that as soon as I came off of everything, it just felt raw. There's a bit in our book where it says the most abnormal thing an addict can do is not use drugs, and that's how I felt. I felt that state of abnormality. It felt like being a fish out of water, early abstinence. It just felt like flapping around in these kind of endless moments where, you know, like I said, the obsession had left, but I felt really lost, really disorientated and really confused. I didn't know where I was going, what I was doing. You know, time just felt like an intimidating prospect without drinking a drug, because my whole life and thinking had been centred in drugs in one form or another, getting and using and all of that stuff. And so to suddenly be without it, I needed NA. I needed to shove that right in the centre where drugs had been. And we were kind of like running out of rehab, getting to meetings, doing loads and loads of fellowship, all of that stuff. And it was really good. 12-steppers started coming out of the woodwork and connecting to us. And by the time I came to leave treatment, my counsellor, who kind of wore his recovery quite openly, he'd said to me, look, we could have done anything in this building. You could have been weaving wicker baskets. As long as you get across and bridge yourself into the 12-step recovery, that's where you're going to find recovery. And that's been my experience, because I came out the other side of treatment and they'd done a great job of feeding me and getting me a semi-normal sleeping pattern back together, and I'd learned to communicate with the therapeutic value of one aid to help another. I was chatting with my pals about what was going on, but I came out the other side of that place, and actually abstinence had become more intolerable. I didn't know at the time, I'd become more and more self-obsessed within abstinence. I'd done a little bit of homework in there. I'd done step 1, 2, 3, quite detailed green and gold work, had a good look at it, but I remember coming out, there was one night where I was waiting for my mate, and I was meant to be meeting with him and his sister and going off to the cinema or something like that. And they were running a little bit late. I was riddled with impatience. I tried ringing someone else who didn't answer the phone. I was convinced they hadn't answered because of something I'd done 6 months ago or whatever. And then I thought, well, bloody hell, this is mental. I saw this couple and thought, oh, they had a couple of beers in their hands. I thought, I'd love a drink. Thanks, Shelley. I thought, oh, what do I want to drink for? I've just been for rehab. No, I like to snowball. Grab a snowball. I thought, oh, God, that's really mental. And I don't want to snowball, I want to kill myself. And then mate who hadn't answered the phone can be at the funeral. Rob Smith from The Cure will be singing. He'll know exactly how I felt. And I thought, oh, God, I've gone absolutely mental. And there was no way that I would, personally, there was no way I could survive abstinence thinking and feeling like that, because it was just so erratic, so unmanageable. And it was that that led me to reach out and ask for help and connect with the sponsor that I'm still working with now and engage this process. Going through the steps actually took me a little over a year, probably, some total. And what a rewarding process. I remember my sponsor's sponsor having said to me at a Clapham Junction meeting on a Thursday night, you're going to hear loads of stuff about these steps. And it was true, I was going to loads of step meetings because that's what the 12-steppers had recommended, and I was kind of just following all the advice on offer. And I was getting loads of information about the steps, but without any experience, that information just equaled confusion. And I remember him saying to me, look, the essence of this program, the opportunity it gives you is to find yourself, to forgive yourself and to forget yourself. And I remember that for me, was the first moment of attraction rather than promotion. That drew me in. I knew that I needed the forgiveness. I hated myself. Self-loathing is really the core of what I suffer from, and I needed to access the compassion of the steps, really. And I was reading a bit in We Do Recover about how our views, our ideas, our opinions change, and all of that stuff for me has been really gradual and has taken a lot of time and application. For instance, there was a point in my journey where people would say the drink and the drugs are just a symptom of addiction, and I'd be like, yeah, okay, maybe for you. For me, it is just about the drink and the drugs, and that's what I'm doing here. Only recently, I was actually introduced to the deeper nature of the illness of addiction and had it manifest in another area of my life, and the fifth year of my recovery was one of the hardest I've been through, actually, and I worked so hard. I sit here in this seat celebrating an anniversary knowing that the last 6 months I was doing two fellowships. I was doing, so, two meeting days, quite a lot of days. I was doing writing every day. I was talking to two sponsors. I was reaching out and accessing the therapeutic value where and whenever I could. I worked really, really hard to keep hold of my personal recovery, and kind of what I've been reflecting on is, wow, okay, so a few years in, it's kind of proved to me that this stuff is still the most valuable thing in my life. I've been all over the world as a direct result of recovery. I've connected with my ambitions. I've been really fortunate. I've been able to travel with that stuff. And, you know, I've had quite a wild time exploring the freedom on offer here. But as soon as... what happened was last year, I'd met someone. She seemed really significant to me. I'd really kind of got my claws into the idea that this was going to be the relationship that completed me as a human being in recovery. She discovered she was critically ill. She had to leave this country for medical attention and was taken off overseas. And as all of that happened, our personal interaction, our relationship actually began to deteriorate. But I was still so attached to the idea of what this relationship could mean to me as an individual that I just really grabbed hold of it, really held on. And a lot of people from the fellowship were coming out to me and saying, you need to let go. You need to let go, let God here. This is where your step three comes in. And they might as well have been talking Swahili. I felt so gripped by this thing, because I was certain that this was what I needed and what essentially is what I wanted. It was the first instance in recovery of me not getting what I wanted and discovering how my illness thrives in that environment. It separated me from people that I loved dearly. I didn't trust my sponsor's words. I didn't trust my friends. I felt really distanced, really isolated, and really, really terrified, because I know what it's like to feel connected to this stuff. I know what it's like to feel engaged. And suddenly I knew what it was like to be on the flip side of that. I was back in that place of extreme isolation. And for me, that didn't equal recovery. But this was how I was thinking and feeling. I was in the pits of despair. I was going through some stuff. It was quite distressing. But like I said, my actions were actions of pure commitment and pure devotion to personal recovery and personal freedom. And luckily, you know, at the turn of this year, I've been liberated again from mental obsession. And I was just joking with someone earlier about the power of mental obsession and that dimension of my disease. Before sitting here to do this chair, I kind of have to run through the step three prayer where I say about relieve me of the bondage of self. If anything, that last 6 months has really introduced me to the concept of the bondage of self-obsession. And I know that the steps, the service, the showing up, the sharing myself honestly with a support network can liberate me, but it's in God's time, not mine. And I feel really, really pleased to be here today, to be liberated once of that obsession and to be able to connect with you guys again and to share my experience. I'll leave it there. Thank you.